What's in a name? The idea we're going to talk about today is based on the book Money Machine. Now, Money Machine is not just a cute title. It's the basis for a common sense and grounded way of thinking about investing your money for future returns. The author of this book entitled Money Machine is with me today. His name is Gary Smith. Gary Smith is a Fletcher Jones Professor of Economics at Pomona College in Claremont, California. He holds a BA in mathematics and a PhD in economics from Yale University. One final thought here. You know, we get a lot of authors and their books coming to us wanting our attention, but this one stopped me in my tracks. It's a delightful exception and standout. Welcome, Gary Smith.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me, Steve.
First of all, Gary, I'm not going to hold it against you that you have a PhD in economics, because generally economists as investors, you know, not so great.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think you stood above the rest. So, let's get started.
Okay.
The full title is Money Machine. The rest of it is The Surprisingly Simple Power of Value Investing. Now, when you say money machine, are you talking like an ATM type of money machine?
No, not at all. The inspiration is, you know, most investors, when they go to buy a stock, they start dreaming, you know, if I buy the stock for 40, maybe the price will go up to 50 or 60 or 80 or 100 or 1,000.
Right.
And I'll make some serious money. And the problem with that is you got to predict what's going to happen to stock prices, which are virtually impossible to predict. And part of the reason is what Keynes called animal spirits, that stock prices are buffeted here and there by human emotions, by fear, by greed, by lust, by panic. And it's just really hard to predict whether the stock prices will be higher or lower 2 minutes from now, 2 days from now, 2 weeks from now.
Right.
And so the alternative is to be a value investor. And if you're a value investor, and it's not just stocks, it could be bonds, it could be real estate, it could be a business. If you're a value investor, what you do is you think about the investment as a money machine. And so for bonds, you say, here's a money machine that generates coupons. For stocks, here's a money machine that generates dividends. For real estate, here's a money machine that generates rent. For a business, here's a money machine that generates cash.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you think that way, then you start thinking, well, what would I pay to own this money machine? I'd like to have it for a long time to get a dividends for 20 years, to get coupons for 20 years, to get rent for 20 years, mm-hmm. to get profits for a business for 20 years. And what would I pay for that?
Mm-hmm.
And the nice thing about that is if you think that way, you don't have to predict what prices are going to be. All you got to do is predict what the coupons and the dividends and the rent and the profits are going to be. And just, is this a fair price for what I'm going to get? And if you think that way, then you're a value investor.
I learned this a long time ago when I entered the business. About 5 years in, this woman walked into my office and she had, you know, 364 shares of Chevron. And I was a bond salesman at the time. And it's like, you know, you're only getting a 4.5% dividend yield on this. Why don't you buy a bond at 7%? She goes, you know, Chevron's really kind of been good to me over the years. So I started to look it up. And I noticed that she had said that 20 something years before she had paid $6,000 for these shares. And I looked at the dividend and I realized she was getting $1,700 a year in dividends today for a $6,000 investment that she had made years ago. That was like a 17% rate of return. It's like, what is going on here? And then I realized, well, because the dividend has increased all these years, well, the stock price must be up. And sure enough, that $6,000 was worth about $34,000.
Yep.
And then I realized, oh, this is this power of increasing wealth. And in this case, it was the dividend that made me understand that.
Exactly.
It's funny that you talk so much about dividends, because today people look at earnings and they don't really care much about the dividends in terms of their calculations. Why do you?
Earnings are good. I mean, you can't pay dividends unless you got earnings.
That's true.
And there are some companies which don't pay dividends, like Berkshire Hathaway and Amazon and Google.
Right.
Which are great companies nonetheless. But reading about a company's earnings is not quite as good as getting a dividend every month or every 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about earnings is you got companies like Enron that can fake the earnings. But you can't fake dividends. If you're going to pay money out to shareholders, you really got to have the money there to pay it to them.
True.
It's like a bird in the hand and two in the bush. That the dividends are here and now. And just like you said, you got a good company and it's paying a good dividend and the dividends are growing over time. The value of the stock or the bond or the real estate or the business, it's going to take care of itself.
Yeah. You know, Buffett talks about this idea of dividends growing, just like owning a bond that has an increasing coupon or interest rate year after year.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so when we think about bonds, most people buy bonds, they think about the rate of return. and they think about the coupons they're getting and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But then when they go to think about stocks, they think about, is the price going to go up or down? And so Buffett, you know, one of the ultimate value investors, says you should think about stocks like a disguised bond and think about the dividends just being coupons. The only difference is that dividends grow over time and coupons don't.
My guest is Gary Smith. He is the author of The Money Machine, The Surprisingly Simple Power of Value Investing. And we're talking about what makes an investment worth more in the future. You know, we are forever, every single day and minute of the day, looking at stock prices. We can see how much corporations are valued in the market. And all of us, I think with few exceptions, are saying, well, you know, I mean, this is where the wealth is generated. The stock price will go up. If I could just, you know, buy it at this price, like you said, and I can earn 10 times my money. And, you know, you always also hear those stories about, you know, if you had bought Amazon during the IPO, the initial public offering, you know, you would have made $1 zillion. And there's some examples in the book about when in the 60s, when the Nifty 50 was doing that and you looked at Xerox, the same things held true. You could have bought Xerox at the initial public offering and then, you know, 10,000 would have turned into 11 million. But of course, where is Xerox today? We won't get into that. But here's my question. My question is, since we're looking at prices, why aren't we looking at what things are worth and how do we determine what a company is really worth despite what the price is saying about it?
Well, the great investors like Ben Graham, he talked about Mr. Market, which is this person that shows up every day and says, here's the price, here's what something is worth, IBM, Apple, Amazon, Google, whatever it is. And sometimes Mr. Market makes sense and sometimes Mr. Market is crazy. And what investors should do, and this goes back to John Burr Williams, Benjamin Graham, Warren Buffett, all the great value investors, you got to think about not what Mr. Market is saying, you got to think about what would you pay to get the cash that comes from this money machine? And that's what the thing is really, that's what a stock or a bond or a real estate, that's what it's really worth. It's what you'd be willing to pay for it. And what Mr. Market says is just noise. Now, sometimes you can take advantage of Mr. Market's craziness, like in 2009 when the stock market crashed and everybody was pessimistic. There were a lot of great buying opportunities out there because Mr. Market was crazy. But the buying opportunities were there because the cash flow from stocks was really, really cheap at that time.
Also, everybody was really terrified.
Exactly. And value investing often turns out to be a contrarian strategy.
Yeah.
And so in the dot-com bubble, when you had companies selling for ridiculous prices with no earnings, no dividends, hardly any business plans, the value investor would say the contrarian strategy is to sit this one out.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2009, when everyone was terrified, the contrarian strategy, the value strategy is back up the truck and load it up with good stocks at cheap prices.
Yeah, but to be successful as a contrarian, you need to be really gloomy whenever when your stocks are doing well. Like my stocks are up, I'm richer, I feel terrible.
Yep.
And when the stock market is terrible and your portfolio is down and everybody you're listening to is negative and pessimistic, you're supposed to feel great.
Yeah.
How does a human being do that?
Well, it's just our human emotions. And as I argue in the book, part of the secret to success of being a value investor is thinking about the cash flow. But part of it also is to control your emotions. And so when you see dot-com stocks going up and everybody, all your neighbors getting rich, trying to resist the temptation to buy those things, it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
And when everybody's scared and terrified of the economy and the world and the stock market, it's hard to be optimistic.
Yeah.
It's hard to go against the grain. And I'd say half the secret to being a successful value investor is to control your emotions and not follow the herd,
mm-hmm.
but to think independently. And the great value investors do that. I mean, the Michael Larsons and the Warren Buffetts and the Benjamin Grahams, the John Burr Williams, they formed their own opinions. And, you know, maybe it helps being out in Nebraska.
It does, I think. Yeah. Yeah. I agree. So, you know, we don't have a lot of time, but, you know, you look at the amount of cash that this entity, whatever it may be, real estate, a business or whatever it is, throws off. And then you try to figure out, well, how much would I pay for that to get a certain rate of return? How do you actually make those determinations without getting too technical?
There's a lot of different metrics that I mentioned in the book. One is just what I call the John Burr Williams equation, which is, like you alluded to before, it's what's the current dividend yield and how fast are dividends growing. And that's a rough estimate of what your long run return is going to be from a stock. And so you've got a stock paying a 2% dividend, mm-hmm. the dividend's growing at 5% a year. In the long run, you make about 7% a year just from the dividends,
Right.
And then you say, well, what's my alternative? 10-year treasury bonds paying 2%?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a great company, one of the top companies in the country, you know, it's a General Electric, it's an Apple, it's a Southwest Airlines, it's a great company paying a good dividend, and a dividend that's likely to grow over time, then compare that to treasury bills, treasury bonds, looks pretty nice.
Where does that put us today then? Because, you know, if you read or listen to a lot of the market mavens and the pundits, you know, they're saying the market, the PE ratio or the price earnings ratio hasn't been this high since, you know, 2007, 1999.
Yep.
And yet, I think from what I'm hearing, maybe the market isn't so terribly overvalued if you're comparing it to the yield on treasuries. The 10-year treasury is a little over 2%.
That's the key. What's your alternative? If you're thinking about treasury bonds paying 2%, and you're thinking about stocks that pay 2% dividends,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty hard to think that treasury bonds are the better investment.
Mm-hmm. Plus, you got the dividend growth.
That's what I'm saying. And so you got your 2% coupons, which aren't growing, or you got your 2% dividends that are growing by 5% a year.
Yeah.
We're not a bubble. This is not at all like the dot-com bubble where people were inventing new metrics to value companies,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
web page visits and stuff like that, which had nothing to do with cash flow.
Now, that's not to say that there aren't stocks in the stock market that are selling at bubble proportions.
Oh,
there
definitely,
are,
definitely,
for sure.
Definitely,
yeah.
definitely.
Okay, so this means if we're looking at cash flow as the main determinant of future returns, then this takes us away from buying collectibles like baseball cards or gold even. Let's go to gold because everybody
or
loves
Beanie Babies. Or, yeah.
Dude, Beanie Babies, yeah. Everybody loves gold. I mean, you know, we love to wear it. We love to look at it. We treasure it. And yet it does not throw off any cash flow. As a matter of fact, you wrote in your book that Warren Buffett said, you know, it costs you, you got to dig a hole to get it out. You got to then get it out. You got to refine it. And then you got to dig a hole to put it back in. And then you got to pay somebody to watch it.
So, yep.
So where does that put us with this idea of, you know, buying gold as a long-term investment?
It's just not. And so another analogy Warren Buffett had was you take all the gold in the world and you melt it down into a big cube and it would fit inside a baseball field easily.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be worth, I don't know, something $11 trillion or something,
yeah.
some enormous amount at current prices.
Yeah.
And you could have that and you could sit there and 100 years from now, it would still be there, still be the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you could hug it, but it would not hug you back. Or you could take your $11 trillion and you could buy some Exxons and Apples and Googles and Amazons and you could buy all the farmland in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And that is all going to throw off an enormous amount of cash flow over the next 20, 50, 100 years. And just gold does not compare. And you know, we talk about people trying to guess what prices are going to be. And so you buy today hoping you can sell tomorrow for a higher price.
Yeah.
And that's called the greater fool theory.
Now, what is the greater, why the greater fool theory?
Because you buy something at a foolish price, hoping you can sell it to somebody who's an even bigger fool than you. And that's not investing. That's not value investing. That's just wishful thinking.
Well, you have a quote in your book from Bernard Baruch. It says, there is no greater dangerous illusion than the belief that one can get something for nothing.
Exactly.
Yeah. I did hear this once before that in Roman times, an ounce of gold would buy you a really good toga. Today, it buys you a really good suit. So it really, the value really hasn't changed.
Nope.
I guess inflation adjusted all that much.
Nope.
Yeah, it hasn't made anybody rich. Now, on the way to the office today, I heard a commercial telling me that the announcer had figured out a secret way of earning the stock market returns without losing money when the market was down. What message is he selling us? What is he telling us? Can that be possible?
Well, he's probably buying put options to protect himself if the market mm-hmm. goes down.
Yeah.
But put options aren't free. I mean, you pay, it's like an insurance on your portfolio, but mm-hmm. you got to pay every couple of months, you got to pay for that insurance. And so.
Yeah. So I'm trying to warn our listeners about looking at or hearing things that sound too good to be true. I mean, this is where
exactly
this is where the Bernie Madoff syndrome comes in. Well, no, I mean seriously, if you add that message to the fact that all your friends and neighbors are doing it, and even if someone that you respect in your community or someone that you've read about that you respect is also involved, that can add to the illusion of something. You've got to really look inside it and understand what you own.
And if you don't understand it, you probably shouldn't invest in it.
Mm-hmm.
And if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true.
So how do we know if we're in a bubble? How can you tell?
Well, the main thing is just to look at prices relative to earnings and dividends. and then compare that to interest rates. And I lay out several different alternative approaches in the book. And right now, we are not anywhere close to the bubble that we saw in 2000 or other bubbles we've had in the past, mm-hmm. like the Nifty 50 that you referred to, where PEs were 60, 70, 80, 90, mm-hmm. and people thought you could get rich just by prices inevitably going up. And today, prices are reasonable compared to dividends, earnings, and interest rates.
Yeah, so if interest rates do start to rise, then we're going to start to see some decline in the price of stocks, most likely.
And also decline in the price of bonds.
And, of course, as well. The book is Money Machine, The Surprisingly Simple Power of Value Investing. It's a great first book. There's some math in it, but it's simple math, and it really will explain to you exactly what you should look at if you're going to decide to invest in the stock market. One last question, you know, for those people who don't really have the time or the skills, what do you think about index funds?
I think index funds are good. What they do is they prevent you from making silly mistakes. And so they sort of protect you from your emotions.
That's a big part of it.
The problem with them is index funds are so widely dispersed that it's hard to make any real money. Like you look at Warren Buffett's portfolio, he's got like 75% of his stock portfolios in six stocks.
Yeah.
And you spread yourself among 100 stocks or 1,000 stocks and you'll do about as good as the market, but you're not going to beat the market.
That's for sure. You're not going to beat the market. Again, my guest, Gary Smith, author of The Money Machine, The Surprisingly Simple Power of Value Investing. Thanks so much for joining me, Gary.
Thank you, Steve.
To hear this conversation again and to find out more about Gary Smith, join the conversation at stevepomerantz.com.